Today, let's do the Torah and Tea on the portion of Va'et Hanan. This is based on Lakuta Sikhas, Volume 19, Va'es Hanan 1, and then hopefully we'll get a chance to do a little bit of Va'es Hanan 2. So, anyways, in today's portion, we have some very powerful psukim, very powerful. First of all, we have the Ten Commandments in this week's Parsha. Second of all, we have the Shema Yisrael. We say that every day, twice a day. We say the Shema Yisrael. So it's all in this week's Parsha. So, and plus a lot of other very powerful stuff. So, but today, I want to concentrate on... Today I want to concentrate on the mitzvah of Torah study, the mitzvah of studying Torah, which, by the way, we learned in the Rebbe's letter, this teacher in a girl's school asked the Rebbe whether it is true that the Rebbe said that women and girls should study Talmud. And, you know, the Rebbe says, you know, everything depends on the circumstances, but the Rebbe says that nowadays it's very important that women, unlike in the olden days, the women weren't educated, they weren't part, but today it's essential that women learn and are taught all the basics of the Torah and Chassidus. Because we get all kinds of information, and we should get the information that Torah gives us. So, therefore, while all information is available, if we don't explore Torah, it's not like we don't have information, but we have the wrong information. We should have at least the perspective of Torah. Anyways, so... where does the Torah, the mitzvah of Torah, one of the main sources of Torah study comes from? This verse, that's in the Shema Yisrael. You say, Vishinantam levanecho, you shall teach them to your sons. Vidibarto bum, and you shall speak of them. What is speak of them talking about? That's Torah. Them here means, speak of them means the words of Torah. So here the Torah... The verse tells us to speak, to study Torah. And it tells you when. It says, b'shiftecha b'veisecha, whether you're sitting in your home, u'velechtecha v'aderech, when you're going on the road. You know, you carry your iPhone or whatever other listening device you have. Listen to words of Torah when you're walking, you're exercising, whatever else you're doing. U'veshogbecha v'kumecha, when you lie down, when you go up, when you get up. Okay. So what's amazing about the mitzvah of Torah study is not only that it is encompassed and mentioned before, there's so many halachas, so many laws, which we need to study just in order to keep on top of all the mitzvahs. We need to know how to do mitzvahs. There's just so much to study. I was once thinking, when I was studying, I said, why don't we just teach the basics and leave the, you know, the extra for a later time. Let's just go through the basics. The answer is just the basics are. It's just, there's so much basics. It's not like you can cover the basics in the, there's just so much basic information that we have to learn all the time. And the more you learn, the more you see that there's even basic stuff that you didn't know till then. You know, you're always always learning more and more and more. But in any event, one of the special ideas of Torah study is it is the only mitzvah that the Torah obligates a father to teach a child, his child who is a minor. Normally we know that minors are not obligated the Torah and the mitzvahs. A minor isn't doesn't have to do Torah mitzvahs, and technically they can violate the Torah from the Torah we're talking about, and there is no obligation. But the Torah obligates a father to teach his child, because it says here, "Vishinantom levonecha," you shall teach them to your son. So that means that there is a mitzvah to teach Torah to a son. Why is the mitzvah of Torah represented in such a way that we teach it to a son? And the Torah, when it talks about studying Torah, v'dibarta bom, it's in conjunction with teaching it to one's son. Also, we see Maimonides and the Alter Rebbe, when they begin about the laws of studying Torah, they all begin with the law of teaching your son, teaching children Torah, teaching Torah to the children. That's the opening. That seems to be the most important. Question is, why is this so important? The source from Torah study is also from this verse. Why is it so important that we associate children with the study of Torah? This is what the Rebbe addresses. And now, while the mitzvah of Torah is a mitzvah as well, it's one of the 613 mitzvahs, there's a difference between Torah and mitzvot. There's a difference. Because Torah is logic, utilizing the intellect. Mitzvahs are acts, utilizing our action. So, to do a mitzvah, most of the mitzvahs that we do are not intellectual, they are practical, pragmatic mitzvahs that we do. When we light the candles, when we give charity, when you help somebody, those are very practical mitzvahs that we do in action. But when we talk about when we talk about study, we have to use our heads, we use our brains. We try to figure things out. That is what Torah study is. So what does this mean? That when you're using your head and you're using your brains, it is more likely for a person to come to and make a mistake. Because, you know, everybody thinks a little differently, and everybody has different idea. We don't think the same. And therefore, sometimes, you know, you have very smart people, and they conclude differently. They use their brains to challenge, like the Torah. Something interesting, the Talmud tells us that before we learn Torah, we have to make a bracha. What the Rebbe's point is going to be, we all have to feel like children when we learn Torah. In other words, we need to have a realization that Torah is the wisdom of God. It's an intellect which is beyond our intellect. So as much as we explore, as much as we try to understand, as much as we work on it, but it's just something which is a little bit that we can understand. But there's a lot more to it that we don't understand. You know, every morning, when we do the morning blessing, there is a blessing that we make. Asher bachar bonu mikol ha'amim v'natan lanu es Torah so. Baruch atah Hashem noten haTorah. We thank Hashem. We bless Hashem. Hashem has given us the Torah. Which means that we acknowledge that the Torah was given to us. It's not something that it's just a regular wisdom. It's just an idea that everybody can just tap in. But we have to have that level of approach. That approach that Torah is beyond. It says in the Talmud a very strong matter that why was the temple destroyed? It says because they didn't make the bracha on the Torah. So why was the temple destroyed? Because they didn't make a bracha on the Torah. That seems like, you know, a very, very severe punishment. It's not the bracha that they made or they didn't make. If you don't make a bracha for the Torah, you don't appreciate the Torah for what it is, then you twist the Torah, then you twist the meaning of the Torah, and then you come up with opposite views of the Torah, and it is essential for the interpretation of the Torah to recognize that the Torah is God-given, the Torah is holy, and only with that introduction we can make sure that we're going to go in the right direction. We're not going to deviate, because we're going to have the proper respect, and we're going to realize that this is Hashem's Torah, and we have to approach it with the proper respect. That's why we need to make a bracha before you start. Now, a mitzvah, you're not challenged, you're just doing something. So you already, when you do a mitzvah, you're already subjugated to Hashem. Why am I doing it? Because Hashem wants me to do the mitzvah. When you do the sukkah, you go, you shake the lulav, whatever you do. So why are you doing it? You're doing it because Hashem told you to do so. So you're sort of accepting Hashem just by observing the mitzvah. But when you're studying Torah, you might want to do it because you're enjoying it. You know, you enjoy the intellectual exercise. So it's very easy to sort of deviate and mistake, you know, start thinking, you know, that this is something which you could just take with pure logic and understanding and treat it as anything else. That's why that's important. And then there's another aspect. When you're studying Torah, you know, a lot of times you get involved in the ideas, and then you're trying to debate someone in Torah. Let's say you came up with a good insight, especially, I know, if you know the way they study in the yeshiva, they always study with chavrusa, they study with a friend. What happens is, you study with a partner, and it's like a give and take, you know, you come up with an idea, and the other one says, no, that really doesn't make sense. He shows you how your argument isn't a good argument, and then in turn, you try to prove your point. And like any other argument, you know, your argument, you're arguing with your friend, you're arguing with your spouse, and you're trying to prove your point. Sometimes you just want to be right, you know, you just want to be right, you know. So even if, let's say, you lose the argument, and you realize that you made a mistake. Sometimes people have a hard time saying, I made a mistake. You know what? You're right. They have a hard time saying that. So you'd rather keep on trying to push your point and either screaming louder or just not paying attention or not wanting to agree. I know you must have come across people like that, or hear the arguments. People are just arguing because they said an idea and they made a mistake. So it's a little bit hard to admit that you made a mistake. Does it mean that you're smarter than me? I said something wrong. That means you know it better. I'm not as great as you, or, you know, I made a mistake. That's, no, especially when you're studying Torah, if you have an idea, sometimes people don't want to admit and said that they made a mistake. You know, somebody asks the rabbi a question. He says, no, so what's the law if this happens? And then the rabbi made a mistake. He made a wrong ruling. So then the rabbi He's too embarrassed to come back and say, oh, you know what, I made a mistake. And especially, you know, if you have sometimes people that are looking to say, ah, this rabbi is not such a smart, he's not as smart as my rabbi, or he's not as brilliant as mine, you know, he's, you know, this is one is a greater, you know, I've heard he's not such a, he doesn't deliver so well, he doesn't present well, he's not, you know, and sometimes the rabbi feels, you know, that he has to sort of defend his position just because that's what he said. So it's very important to have that sense of humility and the sense of honesty, intellectual honesty. Not to want to win an argument, but to just, you know, if you have to be able to accept and say, you know what, you can say or think about me what you like, but if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm going to tell you that I'm wrong and I made a mistake. I thought and I made a mistake. Why I made a mistake? You want to find an excuse? Fine. But you know what? People make a mistake. We find it all the time that in the Talmud that people said, you know what? What I ruled and I said for you was wrong and I take it back. You know? Take it back. And that's it. So there's two things over here. One, before you start learning, you have to start with humility. So before you even start it, you make the blessing and you say to Hashem, I thank you, Hashem, for giving the Torah. I know the Torah is beyond. It's higher than my understanding. It's beyond. And really, you know what? I humble myself and I accept that I'm going to study Torah. The approach is going to be a positive approach of trying to give the proper kavod, proper respect, and the proper recognition that the Torah is Hashem's gift to us, and it's beyond our capacity. And then, when we already start studying Torah, and you get involved in your intellectual argument, and you want to so much prove your point, and you get so much involved in it, to be able to stay humble enough and honest enough to be able to say, you know, I made a mistake, you know? So these are important. So we find in the Pirkei Avot two Mishnas in which we see these two ideas represented. So the first one is the Mishnah 20 in chapter 20. It says like this. Elisha ben Avuya Omer, Elisha ben Avuya says, if you study when you are young, halomed yeled, if you study as a child, lemahu dome, what can you compare him to? What can this be compared to? Lidyoy ksuvo al niyor chadash, to ink written on a new paper. Ink that's written on a new paper hasn't been used. The marking, the writing is clear, it's crisp, it's beautiful. But v'haloymed zokein l'mahudomem, one who learns in his old age, what can that be compared to? L'dioy k'suva al niyar machuk, to ink written on an erased paper that was erased, it was already used and erased. Writing on it is not so clear, it's not so precise, it's not crisp. It's not the same thing. If you study when you're young, you're fresh, you learn, the ideas become incorporated, embedded in you in a very clear way. You get it, you hold on to it. But if you learn like when you're old, then very hard to retain. Like in the Talmud, there is an expression of girsa diyankuso. The learning, what you did when you were young. You remember things from your young learning when you started out a lot better and a lot more stronger than things that you learn later on. People, I know, not even when you become forgetful and old age, but things that you learn when you're older, you don't remember as well as things for exactly the same reason. So, one can ask on this statement, okay, the first part we understand. He wants to encourage you, don't wait to study till you get old. Because if you wait to get study to get old, then it's not going to be a new paper. It's going to be like an old, study young. It's an encouragement. But why does he have to say the second part? It seems to be a very discouraging statement. He's telling us, well, what happens if a person did not have an opportunity to learn when he's young? And he waited till the old age. Well, he shouldn't learn. Oh, you're not really going to get it. You're not going to retain it. Because it's learning, reading on, like writing on an erased piece of paper. Seems to be discouraging message. So the first message is encouraging, telling you the positive. Learn when you're young, and that's the best time to learn. That's the best time to study. But why does he say the second part? But in a way, the context, the Rebbe wants to translate it. It means, if you learn like a child, we're not talking about your age exactly. If you learn like a child, in other words, you keep yourself humble. You don't think that you know it all. You don't think of yourself that you have experience and that you're smarter and you know everything. Your approach is like a child, like before you start learning. And you know this is Hashem and you're only a kid. And there is no way that you are so smart that you're going to outsmart the Torah and you're going to come and tell us different things. If your approach is like a yelled, like a child, then it's writing on new paper. But if you learn like an older person, I've already have all the experience. Zokin zeshekon chokhma, I've already acquired wisdom. I've seen it all, I've known it all, I've heard it all. I've been to all the classes, I've heard all the rabbis, I've read all the books, and I'm already an accomplished. You approach it as a zokin. Then it's like compared to ink on a erased paper. It's not the right approach. The next, that's the approach. Then we have, yeah, go ahead.
Is Elisha ben Abiyahu,
Abuya,
the fellow who stopped believing for a while?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Not for a while. He's the one that went off the derech, yeah. He was the teacher of Reb Meir, the whole many stories about him. It's
right.
Called Acher, it's called, yeah.
Oh, yes.
That is
thank
correct.
You.
Then we have the next Mishnah. Actually, in the order, this is the 19th Mishnah, this is the 20th Mishnah in chapter 4. Over there it says, Shmuel HaKaton Omer. What does Shmuel HaKaton mean? What is Shmuel? The small Shmuel. Some people say he was actually a short guy. No. But he was called the Katan, the Gemara says, because he always humbled himself. He didn't hold himself big, but he held himself a Katan, he held himself a small. So he says, and he quotes a verse in Mishle from Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. It says over there like this. He says, "Binefoil o yivcha." When your enemy falls, al tismach, don't rejoice. Don't rejoice when your enemy falls. Uvikoshloi, and when he stumbles, al yogi libecha, let your heart not be happy. Penyira Hashem, lest Hashem sees, verabe einov, it'll be bad in his eyes, veheshiv ma'olov apoy, and he will return the anger from him. This is a full verse in the prophets, in the Mishle from King Solomon. Exactly word for word. There's not one word added here. The question is, what business does it have with Shmuel HaKotan Omer? Shmuel HaKotan. Shmuel HaKotan didn't say that. That was said by King Solomon in Mishle, word for word. Why is Shmuel HaKotan telling you, repeating basically a statement which is exactly taken out from the book of Mishle and puts it into the ethic of our father, Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, quotes it in the name of Shmuel HaKatan, he should say, Shlomo HaMelech Omer, Ben Fala Yivcha. But Shlomo HaMelech wouldn't belong in the Pirkei Avot, because it's in the Mishlei. Why is he Shmuel HaKatan saying it? The commentaries explain that this is actually not referring to literally as in Mishlei. Mishlei talks literally, your enemy, when he falls, don't rejoice. When he stumbles, your heart should not be happy. That's literally. Shmuel HaKatan is taking that same verse and he's applying it to rabbis, sages, students who are discussing words of Torah. And when you come across in a debate, sometimes you look at your other rabbi as your opponent. And maybe he says, when you are the one that is able to be victorious in the argument, you prove your point. If after all attempts, you are the one that is successful in bringing your point across, and you become the one that is victorious, so when your friend falls, don't rejoice. Don't be happy when the other person falls. One of the prayers we had is brought down in the Meseches Brachos, in the mission over there, also brought down that the rabbis, before they entered the shul, they would say a special prayer. They said a prayer to Hashem. As I entered the shul, he says, Hashem, protect me so that I will not stumble and those around me will rejoice in my failure or my mistakes. And that I should not rejoice when my friends make a mistake. You know, when you are get into a debate and you get into a discussion and it gets heated up, there could be sometimes a situation when the person, you accept him as your opponent, and when he fails and he falls, then you say, aha, I got him. I'm smarter. I win this argument. I get worse. He says, no, that's not b'nefoy al tismach. If he stumbles, don't. Why is it? Why? One can say, look, we're arguing about halacha. What is the halacha? And we figured out I was right and I said the halacha correctly, and my friend is wrong. So why can't I be happy? Because we know now what to do. We know the right halacha. Why shouldn't I be happy? I should be happy for Hashem, for the Torah, because now we know the halacha. But then you would not consider the person your opponent, your enemy, a yivcho. If you're really concerned about halacha, about Torah, why do you treat and feel that the other person, you're not rejoicing because the halacha was clarified. You're rejoicing because you won the argument. So he says, no, that's not acceptable. Now we know, in general we know, that even sometimes when people we don't rule like a certain way, it doesn't mean that they're wrong. For example, my wife asked me, she says, do you have to toivel these plastic dishes? I told her, go toivel it just to worry the more serious, more stringent opinion. So go toivel it, more stringent opinion. Why? Because plastic is a unnatural kind of, it's a man-made kind of material. It's not included in the Torah, in the laws, that the example that they give from the vessels, that dishes that you need a toivel, it's not included over there. So therefore, there's a debate when it comes to koshering. I said, you know what, do it to the kosher. And then, you know, there are some people that do toivel plastic, but the more common accepted halacha is that plastic does not have to be toivel. You don't need a toivel plastic dishes. So it doesn't mean that when you say you have to be toivel plastic dishes, that it's wrong. It's not wrong. There are opinions. The only thing is, but there's just one way to do things. Do we do it one way or not? So the answer is, the accepted custom is that we don't do it. That does not negate that there could be another opinion. It's not a mistake. Something which is called Elu ve'le'ke'elu divrei Elokim chayim, ke'el echot. One God gave them. There are different opinions sometimes. We can't do it two ways. We can only do it one way. But it doesn't mean that the other opinion is wrong. It only means that halacha can only be impractical. Can't do it two ways. You can't toivel plastic and you cannot not toivel plastic. You either toivel it or you don't. So therefore the halacha has to be one way. And you have to decide and know what the halacha is. But I'm just giving you the example over here. So first of all, one has to realize even when you win an argument, it doesn't mean that the other person is wrong. It just means halachically, I'm talking about rabbis who have the title rabbi because they deserve the title. It doesn't mean just because the ruling was wrong, it doesn't mean that we can discount and totally not be considered with them at all. But the halacha is not like them. So even though the halacha is not like them, you can't rejoice and say, I am the one that is better, I'm smarter, and I'm greater because I had the halacha. You can't rejoice by that because you don't really know. Nobody really knows why. And sometimes it's not because you're smarter, just you figured out the halacha. And if you treat like that, then Hashem doesn't like it. Doesn't like your arrogant attitude. Penyir Hashem v'Rabbeinu. Hashem might not like it. V'heishim olav chapei. And he's going to remove his anger from him, which means instead of him not being able to figure out the halacha properly, he will and you won't be able to figure out the halacha. So basically, these two mishnas tell us that the approach to Torah needs to be with humility, and at the time you're studying Torah, you need to be humble, and you need to be accepting, and therefore, you always, have to have that approach. And that's why, as the Rebbe brings it out, that's why we have the mitzvah of Torah and we start the Torah with a child. We started with learning, teaching it to a child. The Torah talks about teaching the children. Because at the end of the day, we're all children when it comes to the words of Torah. A person needs to realize that we are children. And that is our approach, and that we approach it like a child, then we will be able to really be successful and really understand and really learn and really accomplish in the higher level. Okay, we'll go to the second part. And this is actually supposed to be in the second thing. Let me see if I have it over there. The other thing we learned in this parsha, which is not a mitzvah that women do, and that's the mitzvah of tefillin. Although it says that there were some women, I mean, you must have heard that, there were some women that used to put on tefillin also. Like it says about the daughters of Rashi, they used to put on the tefillin. I mean, I'm not talking about conservative people but I'm talking about Orthodox people and great righteous people who put on the tefillin. Not because they feel deprived, but they at their level, they wanted to put on the tefillin. So what does it say in the Parsha? It says, Ukshartom le'os al yadecha. You put it as a sign on your hand, and v'hoyu litot tafot bein einecha. And you put it as totafos, those are the tefillin between your eyes. You know, there is two tefillin. One tefillin goes on your hand, which you wrap around and it goes on your hand. The other tefillin goes on your head, bein einecha. The idea of it is that the tefillin of the hand sits next to your heart. The tefillin on your head, that sits next to your brain. The idea is you tie your hand, your heart, and your brain to Hashem. That is the idea of the mitzvah, to take a moment to tie your heart and your brain to Hashem, to devote it to Hashem. But the order is important, because the way we put on the tefillin, we always try first the tefillin of the hand, and then we put the tefillin on the head. And the reason is that the approach, a similar idea like we said before, first, before we get into the intellect, we have to get emotionally involved. First, we need to have our emotions involved. Important is to serve Hashem with love, to serve Hashem with awe. You know, the Jewish people said, Naseh v'nishma. First we'll do, and then we'll understand. Basically, they accepted Hashem with love first. And then they said, we will listen, whatever God will tell us to do. Imagine, we accept Hashem. And then we will figure out how we're going to do it. We're going to figure it out. First the heart, and then the brain. You know, there is a verse that says, whatever God tells the Jews to do, he does himself. So if God gave us a mitzvah to put on the tefillin, the Gemara, the Talmud states that God puts on tefillin as well. Now, if God tells us that we have to put on first the tefillin of the hand, and then we have to put on the tefillin of the head, metaphorically, so to speak, Hashem also puts on first his tefillin of his hand, and then the tefillin of his head. In the Talmud discusses what exactly is written in God's tefillin. We know the portions of the Torah that are written in the tefillin, the four portions. But what exactly are written in Hashem's tefillin? The Talmud goes through various different portions that are written in the tefillin of Hashem. But which tefillin does Hashem put on first? Must be like we do. He puts on first the hand, and then he puts on the head. The Baal Shem Tov says a very powerful message, that in Hashem's tefillin as well, the hand comes before the head. What is it represented? What does the head represent? What does the tefillin represent? The head, the tefillin of the head represents the intellectual people. People who have a deep understanding. People who connect to Hashem philosophically in a very high, strong capacity. Understanding creation, knowing Hashem. That's a high intellectual level. That's the connection. Oh, it's the Torah connection. That's the head connection. Then there's other Jews that connect Hashem with the heart. They get in love with Hashem. They get in awe of Hashem. The Baal Shem Tov, we know, loved the simple Jews. The Baal Shem Tov reached out to the simple Jews. The Rav Shem Tov says that the value of a Jewish soul doesn't matter if you're simple or not, is of the most precious and of the greatest level is a Jewish soul. It doesn't matter. But not only that, the Baal Shem Tov said that the simple people who serve God with simplicity, they serve God with love, they serve God with awe, in a way, they are even greater than those that serve Hashem only with their intellect. This was part of the philosophy of the Baal Shem Tov that got him into trouble with the opponents, with the Mitnagdim. Because can you imagine if the Baal Shem Tov advocates for the simple folks and says that they are important as the intellectuals, and in a way, even more important than intellectuals. So where does that leave the intellectuals? It doesn't leave them anymore on their very high caliber where they place themselves. Because now they say there's others who are just as well and great for us. The story told in the previous Rebbe's stories, he relates that the Baal Shem Tov would have a whole group of students, and most of them were knowledgeable and great students. And what happened was that most of the time, the Rebbe would give Torah and teaching, and that would be beyond the scope of the understanding of the simple people. Baal Shem Tov had also a great following of simple people that came to him. So, while the Baal Shem Tov would give the regular teaching for everybody, the simple people didn't understand too much what was going on. But there was a special Suda Shlishit on Shabbat was reserved by the Baal Shem Tov specifically for the great scholars. They would gather in the place, in the house of the Baal Shem Tov, in a big room, and the Baal Shem Tov would give special attention to the great scholars. One time, as the Baal Shem Tov was sitting with these people, he told them, the students, that they should make a full circuit. He told each one to put their right hand on the shoulder to the student next to them, and so around, they went around the table and then the Baal Shem Tov placed his hand to the student to his right and to the student to the left, and they finished the circle. And all of a sudden, they hear the sweetest tunes and the most yearning prayers, how they people are pouring out their neshama, their souls, to Hashem, davening with such fervor, with such prayer, saying Tehillim, saying those words with such filled with meaning, with so much kavana, with so much enthusiasm, with so much seriousness, and they were like, sounded like an Eden to the students because they saw a vision because of the circuit the Baal Shem Tov created. They saw this. And then the Baal Shem Tov took off his hands. It all disappeared. So what happened? When the simple folks were not invited to this special Suda Shlishi's gathering, so what did they do? They went to the shul. And in the shul, they were saying Tehillim. And the Baal Shem Tov was showing his students. They were feeling elevated, we're special, we're invited to this special Baal Shem Tov's Suda Shlishis, we're better, they get a sense of feeling haughty, that they have more privileges than the others. Baal Shem Tov showed them, he says, these are the people, the simple people, because of their simplicity, they really pour their hearts out to Hashem. They daven with so much kavana, with so much energy, that it goes beyond the energy and even of the greatest of the scholars. When Hashem puts on his tefillin, he puts on first those tefillin of the Shel Yad. He puts on of those yidden, those simple yidden. That's his first, because that's the most precious to Hashem, is those simple people. After them, Baal Shem Tov says, then Hashem goes to the greater intellectual, into the people. It doesn't mean that we're knocking the intellectual people. It just means that each one has their place. Each one has their specialty. And no one should be condescending or think less than on the other person. If you have a privilege and you're learned and you had opportunities, go ahead, utilize it 100%. But then realize that there is others that did not have the opportunity. You know, many people in the Holocaust, during the Second World War, or generally, there was a lot of people, smart, capable, people that had to fight just to put a piece of bread on their table. They didn't have a chance to go to school. They didn't have a chance to study. They wouldn't have an opportunity. Every day, there were young people that had to go from very young age, work hard, labor, to feed the family, to feed a mother, if there was no father, feed the brothers and sisters. And then you have a new generation who was privileged and they had the best education and they go to school and they look down on some of the other people and they say, you guys are so ignorant, you guys are so unlearned, you are so simple, you're like a peasant, you don't deserve any respect. Little do they know that these people are no less and no worse than they are. It was only their life circumstances brought them to a situation which the opportunity wasn't given to them. So be happy with your opportunity. Be happy when Hashem gave you. You did have an education. You did have an opportunity. Hopefully that made you into a bigger mensch. Not to a bigger beast, chas v'shalom, but made you a bit better person. But always remember that the people with the heart that mean well, even if they're not learned, even if they didn't have the opportunity, or whatever the reason may be, Hashem loves them, and you should love them too. Okay, this concludes our class for today.